mind in just a little bit. Matthew chapter 10. Just real quick, I'm not going to go long. I know I'm just getting started. I'm not even sure I'll get past the introduction. But that's fine. This time frame, it's been a while since I've looked at some of the background. I don't have all the notes, but this is sometime at the end or in the time of the second year of the ministry of Christ after the Passover that John refers to as the feast, which is debatable as to exactly what that was. Jesus Christ had healed a man who'd been lame for 38 years. Jesus had then gone through Nazareth again and doing some preaching where he was not very well received. And he makes the comment in that context that, you know, a prophet is not without honor but in his own country and among his own kin and his own house. So he couldn't do a whole lot there. And then he went on a circuit of preaching through the villages and teaching in Mark 6 and Matthew chapter 9. And as he was traveling, the statement is made there in verse 36 of chapter 9. And when he saw the multitudes, he was moved with compassion on them because they were scattered, because they were fainted and were scattered abroad as sheep having no shepherd. And then he makes that statement, which is often used as a in a missions context. The harvest truly is plenteous, but the laborers are few. Pray ye therefore the Lord of harvest that he might send forth laborers into his harvest. And then in chapter 10, he does exactly that. But as I was looking at that, it's not exactly a random thought, but it is related to that, about sending forth laborers into the harvest. And I addressed this a little bit this morning when we talked about being called and ones who are called and ones who are sent. And what we need to look at or consider is if we're not called to go, we're called to send. And that doesn't specifically always mean just put more money in the offering plate for the missions fund. We're called to send. So let me ask you this. Are you ready and willing to send your kids? I think in a church like this, the vast majority would say yes. But are you? Really? Are you influencing your kids so that they will be disposed to go? Or are we talking about, well, you get this education to make a lot of money and do this, and we're going to have so much fun with the grandkids and all this stuff. How are you pushing them? How are you influencing them? Are you teaching them how to talk with people about Christ? Are you encouraging them? Some years ago, I went on a visitation with my church at Greenville while we were down there. The man I got to go with, his name is Dr. Bob Bell. Some of you will know him. Dr. Bell was an MK raised in Haiti. Dr. Bell is probably one of the brainiest guys I know. I don't know that he actually has his devotions in Hebrew and Greek and Aramaic, but he could, literally. And it wasn't until my last year and a half that I actually began to get classes from him, because every time I took a class he normally took, he cycled out of it, and they just rotate classes around. But the last year and a half that I got to know him, it was absolutely phenomenal. Because everybody, he had a reputation among the students. Oh, man, he's hard. He's this. He's that. And they just didn't know the man. I had two occasions in which I got to go on visitation with him out of our church at Hampton Park. And I saw a side that I wish everyone had seen. Here was one of this brilliant, brilliant man. And I'd been working at Hampton Park running the bus ministry, and we'd have as many as 360 kids coming on about 7 or 8 different buses. And it was all in the ghetto areas and really rundown areas. And here I am out there with this brain of a theological giant, and we're going in these ghetto areas. And I had heard that he had been raised in Haiti. I didn't really know what that meant until we got out there. And I saw this great man, theologically, this brilliant man. We knocked on a door, and this old woman answers. and she's got maybe 20% of the teeth are still in her head, and she can't talk clearly at all, partially maybe because of that. And I saw Dr. Bell just talk to her like a lost soul who needed a Savior. Nothing profound, but extremely profound. And that had an influence on me. You may not have any kids of your own anymore to influence, but that had an influence on me to see this man who I greatly respected and who had a reputation that was totally false. He loved souls. And we're in this ghetto, and everyone in that ghetto is on welfare, and everyone, it's, you know, it's a bad place. And for him, it's just people on the way to hell. Is that the way you see your neighbors? Is that the way you see life? Because that's the reality. I talked this morning about toys. You know, we have so many toys in this country. And there's nothing wrong with a lot of them. They're not inherently sinful in and of themselves. But for me, I can't just go out and, the illustration I used this morning, because we live in a, my family, I'm the only one that doesn't have a concealed carry. I can't just go out and spend $700 for a 9mm Ruger, which I really would like to have. So I got some better things to do with the money. And I can't take it with me over there anyhow. If I try, I'll end up in a jail ministry. Influence them. Jesus said, pray ye therefore the Lord of the harvest to send forth laborers. Well, he'll send them forth if you'll prepare them and help them get there and encourage them. When I first surrendered, this isn't exactly what I had to say, and I didn't ask you, Pastor, what time I'm supposed to shut up, but and sometimes it's hard to differentiate between the Holy Spirit and your own pride, but we won't go long. I had some support from the family. I had one that threatened to beat up my pastor because of the influence he thought I was under, and that one was very capable of doing that. That has all changed greatly since then. But influence them. Chapter 10, verse 1, we've got to do a little bit there anyhow. And when he had called unto him the 12 disciples, he gave them power against unclean spirits and to cast them out and heal all manner of sickness and all manner of disease. And then verse 5, these Jesus sent forth and commanded them, saying, go. I know there's another word after that, but it's go. Here's a short-term missions trip. He sends these men out to do something specific. He sends them to a place where they are not allowed to go and sends them to a place where they are allowed to go. He was training them for future ministry. And he's got some restrictions in there. We don't really have time to develop all that. We may revert to it a little bit. He's got some restrictions in there. But he says, first of all, go. They need to learn to go where God says to go. They need to learn to go, not go where God says not to go. They need to learn how to trust God for the provisions. Most missionaries, not all of them necessarily, but most missionaries have that lesson to learn, or will learn that lesson. You get over there and you are 100% dependent on your supporting churches. And I've mentioned this before, I'll say it here so everybody can hear it. I am a rare bird in a number of different ways, some of them rather odd, but we have never had less than 100% of our support come in any given month. And if there was a month when it didn't come in, the next month it did. It came in extra. Sometimes with the mail system, we'll get from a supporting church support check in the first or second day of the month, and then on the last day of the same month, so it's recorded there. But it all bounces out. You know, God takes care of His own. And He does it through a means, and that means, or in this particular case, is the supporters. But we have to learn to trust God to take care of you. But that's not just over on the mission field. You have to learn to trust God here to take care of you. I have a friend in Denver, Colorado. His name is John Sanchez. He is the CFO right now of a company, so he's doing quite well. And he and his wife both have had good jobs, and they support us in particular. Some years ago, he said he got laid off. He said, Dad, I'm going to have to drop you guys. I said, no problem. The Lord will make it up. And I don't go through and check off, see who paid and who didn't pay. But He drew my attention to it, so I began to check and notice. He didn't miss any week, any months, month after month. It just kept coming. A couple of weeks ago, we were out there, and I brought that up to him and asked him what was going on. Through four, I think it was four different situations, from the time that he told me that he'd have to drop us, he said, when I got to the end of the month, when that month I'm not going to be able to send anymore, the Lord provided another temporary job. Had a three-month contract with somebody, then a four-month contract with somebody else, and this and then that. And every time he got to the point where, Lord, I don't have the money to send to him anymore, he got another job. See, God takes care of you. It's not just so you can send more money to the mission field, but I don't know, maybe it is. Why not? We have needs. I mean, so do you. I know, I understand that. But, see, God will take care of you. Lynn and I learned years ago, I was raised Southern Baptist, had never seen a missionary in my life until after I'd gotten married in an independent Baptist church out in Hobbs, New Mexico. It didn't take us long to learn, not just tithing, but we use faith promise. I don't know if you use faith promise here or not, or some sort of, you know, something for missions. Anyhow, however you do it, you know, that's your business, not mine. But it didn't take long to learn that. And when we had, you know, we were what they called dinks, double income, no kids. When we had money, and we were generous with it to the Lord, with the Lord's people and the Lord's house, and I honestly believe that we're reaping the benefits of that today. God's debtor to no man. In fact, at this point in time, we're more than a hundredfold beyond whatever we ever gave. God took care of us. He'll take care of you. There is a restriction here. Jesus identified the target groups. He said, go not to the Gentiles. Why not? Aren't they lost too? He said, yeah. He said, but don't go there. Go to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. Aren't the Gentiles lost too? Yeah. But why not? It wasn't time. This may sound strange, but you know you can actually violate God's will in a sense, or God's timing, by going when you're not supposed to go. Now, I know we're not under the situation that they were under, and we have the Great Commission. But He calls specifically, because there's some places that you can minister that others can't. It wasn't time for the disciples to be identified with evangelizing the Gentiles. Because if they had, then we can speculate the reaction of the Jews would have been, oh, this is a Gentile thing, and then it would have been all the more difficult. But there are places that you can minister that others can't. See, if Pastor Mihai or Utsu or I had gone over to Hadsig and started going door knocking and passing out tracts and talking to people over there, well, we don't know what the response would be, but if it's anything like in Hunedoara, it had been kind of slow and antagonistic and standoffish. But with Florine over there, just this simple construction man who kind of, in a sense, keeps his head down, keeps his nose clean, and speaks up for the Lord when it's time. With him there, there's a wide open door. Now, the Lord seems to have closed it for a moment, but what I'm saying is, you can do some things that your pastor can't do. See, he's the hired man, if I can put it that way. He's the hired gun. He's paid to say what he says. You're not. In fact, you're helping pay him to pay what he says. Your testimony as a layperson can be much more influential and stronger than any evangelist or any preacher. Do you realize that? Do you believe that? You should. People will listen to you. They may shut you off. I don't know. Things are getting tougher in the States. I don't know. But Jesus said, don't go to them now. It won't be effective. Later on, Paul will go. And then it'll be more effective. But rather go to the lost sheep of Israel. I'm running through my mind so much different things to say. I know we're about out of time. Let me emphasize this. You are where God has you because you are the one that can reach your little world. And you've probably seen some presentations of spheres of influence and all that. But however you got to where you are, whether it's God's providence or you're specifically following God's leading. There's a lady in the 19th century whose name was Miss Havergal. You might know the name. She was a poet and a songwriter, hymn writer in the 19th century. She found herself as a teacher in a girls' school in Dusseldorf, Germany, way back then. She was an extremely timid young lady. And when she got there, she didn't really know what she was getting into, and suddenly she realized that she was the only believer in that school, and it scared her to death. She didn't want to stay. She planned to go back, and then she had this thought, I'm the only one Christ has here. I must walk worthy of my calling for Christ's sake. See, she didn't plan on being a quote-unquote missionary there. She didn't know what she was getting into, and when she did find it out, it was kind of, whoa, I don't know if I like this or not. But God, in His sovereignty, put her there on purpose, and the material I read did not give any kind of results of what happened. But she determined, while she was there, she would be a testimony for Christ. And every girl in that school understood that they were a sinner before a righteous God, and there would be a day of accounting. There's also a way of escape. There's another man, I don't know his name, and this is from, I think, the 60s or 70s. Some of you may have seen some years ago the film Itau, which was of a man, a farmer, I believe from Pennsylvania region, and he had determined to go and take the gospel to a particular group of people down there that had no written language. And he was turned down by a number of mission boards because he was too old. He couldn't learn the language. He was too undisciplined, whatever. He didn't have the Bible schooling. So his home church took up 100% of his support and sent him anyhow. Because he knew he was called specifically, I must go there in that particular place. And he went. All by his lonesome. Except for the support of one church. And he learned their language. He put it in writing. And he began to tell the Bible stories, starting in Genesis. Actually, he started before Genesis. He started with a map of their village. Said, you live here, you live there, you live there. And then expanded the map. This is that village. You know that village? Those people you don't like? That's that village. Here, here. And you see that big silver bird up there? I got here from there, and he expanded it out to America. And then he expanded it out to Israel. He said, I'm going to tell you a story that starts here in Israel. And then he started in Genesis 1. And by the time he got through the sacrifice of when Abraham was sacrificing his son, they had already figured something out. He stopped with a knife in the air. And he said, I'll tell you the rest next time. And these simple native people, they're just sitting on the edges of their chairs or stumps, whatever they're sitting on or nothing. And four or five of them came up to him during the pause, it was the next day or the next week, and said, I know what's going to happen. I said, what? He said, your God is going to provide a substitute. They'd figured that out. From there, he presented Christ. 100% of that village got saved. And then they began to go out and reaching out. And I don't know the end story of that. He knew where he was called. And he went there on purpose. Mrs. Havergal suddenly found herself in a situation she didn't expect. But she determined. What was the quote there? Let me find it again. I must walk worthy of my calling for Christ's sake. Are you doing that where you live? You are where you are by the direct sovereignty of God. And it doesn't matter where you are. He will use you there if you're willing to be used. That's really all I have time for, but I want to encourage you. when you get to be my age, I thought I'd never say this. When I was a teenager, I hear people talk like this, and man, what are you talking about? But when you get on this side of whatever, it used to be 30, then it's 40, now it's 50, next year it'll be 60. It becomes all the more real the short amount of time we have here. And we can't begin to comprehend eternity. But we'll look back at this time on earth and realize what an opportunity we had. One of my professors, Dr. Custer, another exceptionally godly man, I think God gave me the best professors I ever had, that ever walked the earth. He made a comment like this, another brilliant man. He read an entire book every single day of the year. He said, "I never complain about getting tired, because it's only on this earth that I can get tired for the cause of Christ. In heaven, you can't get tired." I never forgot that. Now, sometimes I have in the midst of being tired and fussing a little bit about it, but then that'll come back to mind and say, okay, enough of that. We can't really comprehend all that's taking place right now. I'm thoroughly convinced that we are in a serious spiritual warfare. We don't even realize what's going on around us right here, right now. God expects us to be those disciples that He can send out. Short-term mission trip like that, long-term, or those that send. Wherever you fit into that, God's got a job for you towards His glory, His honor, for the praise of His name. Let's do everything we can for that, because this life is short. Eternity is a long time. Pastor, thank you.